This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing, and your number is 877-217-5757. Thanks to Julie Baxter Pair, who hosted yesterday and did a nice job, and it is a pleasure to be back with you. Emails go to talk@talklouisiana.org, and we are beginning our show today with a frequent guest, Dan Moldea, the intrepid reporter from Washington, D.C., whose work is as substantial as any reporter in America. He's been doing his thing for a while. And good morning to you, Dan Moldea.
Good morning. Were you on vacation?
Well, I was, it's a long story, but I was doing some other duties as the president of the National Association of State Radio Networks, but I only missed a day.
You're an Elon Musk-ary kind of guy. Good for you.
I'm not Elon Musk, though. But I don't know if I want to be, but let's start there. He's even involved in the war in Ukraine. This guy is ubiquitous, if there ever was a guy who had his tentacles in places far and wide.
I don't know very much about the guy. I sort of, for a while there, I was kind of admiring his reach to the stars. I thought that was sort of amazing for a businessman to be doing something like that. And but through his Twitter episodes and through his, you know, this Ukraine situation where he seems to think he has his own foreign policy, you know, I think I've learned to disrespect the guy more and more. And I've been going on Twitter less and less and everything else, and I just find him a bit intolerable.
Well, Twitter is now X, thanks to X marks
right.
the spot,
X.
thanks to
X.
Elon Musk. But hey, I guess he wanted to make his brand unique, and he has done that. Now, you, I know, are a newsman first and a partisan second. And just to show that we are truly fair and balanced, there's a story I think that is alarming involving a Democratic U.S. Senator, Robert Menendez of New Jersey. His case, as the front page of the New York Times on Sunday says, reveals a trail of lavish gifts. He has been indicted. He once was on trial, and it was a hung jury. And this guy has the brass to say that he's going to run for re-election, or at least he's implying that. And he says that he keeps high levels of cash at his house for various reasons. But to give the Cliff Notes version of this, he was involved with some negotiations with Egypt involving his role as a U.S. senator. It smacks of something similar to what Bill Jefferson was convicted of, the congressman in New Orleans, and served time. And later his conviction was overthrown because it was ruled that it did not involve his job as a U.S. member of the House of Representatives. But Menendez, he's a guy who seems to push the envelope, does he not?
Yeah, and this is his second time at the plate in the indictment world, and he is, you know, he's. If we're going to be fair about this, and you pointed it out, if we're going to be fair about this thing, we have to have there's a single standard of justice, and Menendez, I think, you know, giving up his committee assignment, his committee chairmanship, that was obligatory. He had to do that. But staying in the Senate under these circumstances, considering this is his second time, he sort of has to go. I mean, I took a ton of grief back whenever it was when Al Franken had that unfortunate, and I like Al Franken. I thought he was a terrific senator and everything else. But that photograph, to me, you know, that kind of, you can't be complaining about, even though it was a joke and everything else, you can't be complaining about what Trump does and then allow, you know, people to get away with that. I mean, he's got to go. And I think Al Franken did the right thing. I thought it was a shame that it happened and everything else, but I think he did the right thing by resigning. I would prefer to see him in the Senate than not, but I think he did the right thing by resigning. And I think Menendez would do the right thing by resigning as well.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. And I've already gotten an email from a listener, Hal in Monroe. What about Clarence Thomas? Supreme Court justices, they get lifetime appointments. And it is apparent, based on the actions of Clarence Thomas, that there's very little, if any, oversight. This man has basically, I said it on the air the other day, I think based on what we know, it appears he is a grifter. What do you make of Justice Thomas?
Well, Justice Thomas, you know, the Attorney General in Texas, who just went through the impeachment process. I mean, the Democrats, you know, some of the Democrats like Al Franken try to do the right thing, but it's not, there's no following suit here in this kind of a situation. Clarence Thomas, you know, Menendez was nailed by existing law. If Clarence Thomas had done the same thing, there would probably be no existing law that would be preventing him from doing that. And what needs to happen is that the United States Congress is going to have to step up, and they're going to have to write some legislation which is going to, since they're not going to self-monitor, I mean, it's clear that the Supremes aren't going to self-monitor, and so the Congress is going to have to legislate something that put these people under a ethical standard in which they are accountable, held accountable for, you know, all this money they take, especially in the case of Clarence Thomas.
Well, Justice Thomas was appointed in 1991, the latter part of that year. The vote was 52-48. Louisiana's two Democratic U.S. Senators, John Breaux and Bennett Johnston, both voted for his confirmation. And Johnston had led the fight successfully to not put Robert Bork on the court, but he folded for Clarence Thomas, as did Joseph Robinette Biden Jr. Anita Hill passed a polygraph. Clarence Thomas refused to take one. And yet Biden, who was chair of the Judiciary Committee, let Orrin Hatch in particular and Arlen Specter just beat the hell out of Anita Hill with her family there for no good reason. Some believe just for that, that Joe Biden should never have been president of the United States. Your thoughts, Dan?
Well, the Bork confirmation hearings is what sort of what the Republicans have always used as their line of demarcation for contemporary, fierceness, the ferocity of the of opposition research. You know, the people elect the people. You know, I'm against, you know, Trump being, you know, they say, oh, he can't run here, he can't run there. Listen, the people have to decide. I can't believe that the American public, which had the wisdom and the good sense to elect Barack Obama in 2008 and then reelect him in 2012, are going to turn around now and give Donald Trump, after he tried to overthrow the United States government, after he lost the election fair and square, they're going to give him a second term. I just don't see that happening. So I think he has to be allowed to run, just as I think Joe Biden, no matter what, and he either wins or he loses. It depends on the votes.
877-217-5757 for Dan Moldea. Rob on Lakeshore. Rob, good morning, sir.
Hello, Dan. I don't think Congress possibly has the ability to regulate the Supreme Court. There's a separation of powers, and it's an Article III court. I don't see how they can pass legislation that's binding.
You sound like an attorney.
I was before I resigned. Yes.
In your opinion, who in government would be responsible for overseeing the court? I would assume with the three branches of government and the checks and balance that somebody would be able to take responsibility for this. What say you?
I don't think that's correct. They self-regulate, and I think that's the way the founders intended it.
So that's it.
But,
okay.
You know, it'll be litigated, but I think perhaps the House could deal with it through appropriation.
All right. Well, justices in other states are impeached sometimes for wrongdoing, and there could be a constitutional amendment for term limits for U.S. Supreme Court justices. It seems like that would not be an unreasonable thing to do, Dan.
I leave that to the lawyers on this. I know that it just common sense tells me that what Clarence Thomas has been doing is just beyond the pale. And even though he claims no conflicts of interest and he's not recusing himself from cases, even despite his wife's high profile as a political right winger, it just baffles me that there's absolutely no way that we can hold these people to account.
877-217-5757. Dan Moldea is with us. Latest Washington Post poll shows President Biden trailing his predecessor by 10 points. Now, the Post says its own poll is an outlier, but is Biden in trouble and is Trump on the rise? We'll talk about it when we return in 89.3 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing with the assistance of Renee Martin and Dan Moldea. One of our faves is with us, the remarkable reporter from Washington, D.C., who's been doing his thing for about half a century since he left Kent State University, and he is with us. And for those in Louisiana, we know him as the reporter who basically changed the course of the careers of David Vitter, Bob Livingston, and Newt Gingrich. Again, 877-217-5757. Before I hit the break, I was talking about this poll showing Trump ahead of Biden by 10 points. Dan, do you believe it's real? The Post, in its own assessment of its poll, says it's an outlier. What do you think?
I can't believe it's true. It could be because somebody might be trying to send a message to Joe Biden to get out of this thing, and give somebody time to get in and become familiarized with what's going on and that they could be running for president. I like Joe Biden very much. I think he's been a remarkable one-term president, and he's accomplished some amazing things, bipartisan things. But it's just getting too close to the final act, and for him to let me put it this way, Jim, and I've said this on your program before. I can't stand watching Joe Biden talk. And I can't stand watching him walk. He's just not. I'm 73, and I'm 7 years younger than him. And I couldn't even go through a day of what he goes through. This has got to be, this is a job for a younger person, a person who was like Barack Obama's age. And of course, I love Hillary Clinton. I think she would have been a wonderful president. But we're playing the hands we're dealt here. But we've got how many months? 14 months before the election, and we've got a guy who I just don't think. I think we've got two guys who I don't think either one of them is physically fit or mentally prepared to be president of the United States. That's kind of the way I feel. And I think if it's going to be Kamala who's going to take his place, and they're just running out the clock until everybody has to sign up for the primaries and everything, so that she will not have a primary challenge. I'm down with that. I'm fine with it. But some sort of a decision has to be made. Otherwise, we're going to get some crazy person in there as president. And you can see how many crazy people we have in the other party, in the Republican Party, by this nonsensical shutdown of the government that's about to happen. Revolution for the hell of it. The shutdown for no reason, for no motive. And I can't believe that the Republicans aren't going to take it in the ear again, like they always do, when they shut down the government.
877-217-5757. Please be concise, Patrick in Innisfail States. Patrick, you're on with Dan.
Hey, hopefully they can rig the second election as well. But
Wait a minute. There was no rigged election, Patrick. There was and you're laughing. I think you know what you're doing. You're trying to be provocative, and you're achieving your goal. Keep going.
Okay, I got one question. Why aren't the Democrats upset about all the bribes that Joe Biden has taken? I mean, it's obvious that he took a lot of bribes through communist China.
It's obvious. You have evidence, Patrick, that this has happened.
Yes, he's calling his son.
All right.
He's calling the brother. They're involved with bribes.
All right. Well, Patrick is obviously a consumer of Fox News, Dan. And if you watch Fox News, I think you might think the same way Patrick does.
Well, I watch Fox News so that a lot of my friends don't have to. You know, I watch it for a little bit, you know, for 5-10 minutes, you know, get my daily daily grip of aggravation, and then I move along. You know, Patrick's a guy who I'm sure is well-intentioned and loves America and has been completely and totally drunk the Kool-Aid that has been given to him, as you say, Jim, by Fox News. I mean, with regard to the laptop, I got to go pick, I keep going back to the laptop. And from what I understand, Hunter Biden has just sued Rudy Giuliani because of the handling of the laptop. I mean, that laptop has gone through a lot of hands of people who are not friendly to either Hunter Biden or to his president. First of all, I couldn't care less about Hunter Biden. To me, he's just kind of a, in a sense, he's kind of a despicable guy. And I couldn't care less what happens to him. I do care what happens to his father. I cannot believe for a second, not for a second, that Joe Biden would have taken money. I just can't believe it. I just can't believe it. And that he would, and that he would put his fate in the hands of this drug-induced son of his who he has, you know, covered for so long. I just can't believe Joe Biden would do something corrupt. I just can't believe that he would do it. But we will see what happens. But I can assure you that that computer that everyone's talking about, that laptop computer, that thing has been sabotaged, and that will never be admitted in a court of law.
Mm-hmm. Now, can you imagine what Fox News would do if Joe Biden had a daughter and a son-in-law working in his administration who conducted a deal and got $2 billion from a hostile country in Saudi Arabia?
The daughter got trademarks for her products and from China. Absolutely. Yeah, they would be going out of their minds. Hey, listen, if Black Lives Matter had attacked the Capitol as the MAGA crazies did on January 6, 2021, you know, the right wingers in Fox News would have been screaming for retribution. They would have been screaming for trials. They would have been, instead of saying, oh, this was just an average day of tourism on Capitol Hill.
Paul in Opelousas. Hello, Paul.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning. Just a question. If former President Trump would win, would he be term limited to one term or two since he's skipping?
No, he can only serve as president for 10 years maximum, two terms. That changed, actually changed with Harry Truman, who was eligible to run for a third term, but he chose not to. He was in the primaries, people forget that, in 1952, but opted out when he knew he was going to lose. But no longer, you can only serve two terms. It's not like governor of Louisiana, where you can sit out and come back and serve another two. Trump, if he wins, unless we change the Constitution, Dan, unless we change the Constitution, he could only serve one term, and he would be older at the end of that term than Biden will be at the end of his term. So Trump's an old man, too. I would hate to think that either one of these guys would be president at 90 years old, but I wouldn't be surprised if Trump got back in and tried to change the Constitution.
Bottom line, Jim, I don't think that either one of these two guys are going to be there in November of 2024. I don't think either one of them will be in the race at that point. I think something's going to happen where both of them are going to have their own problems, and they're going to have to step aside and allow younger people to come in. In the case of Trump, younger and less crazy people to come in and to do something. But I'm afraid of some Trump light guy coming in and being able to do things that that Trump would do. I mean, let's face it, Trump is coming in for retribution. I mean, he's saying some terrible. What did he say? What did he say about Milley, General Milley, in that social media thing? Mm-hmm. Did you read about this?
Yeah, he's talking the talk. But
he's saying that he accused you know, the Joint Chiefs of Staff chair as a traitor, and said that in another time he would be given the death penalty. I mean, you know, this is Donald Trump, an ex-president of the United States who attempted to overthrow the United States government. Well, that's why I say I just don't see this guy being there at the end. The American public is too smart. They care for their democracy, and they're not going to allow this authoritarian white nationalist to come in and get another shot at being president of the United States.
Well, Trump's close friend is Vladimir Putin. Mitchell and Sherwood. Mitchell, good morning.
Yeah, first of all, y'all talking about that Biden young guy. That man was in an accident at a young age and lost his mom and his sister, and his brothers was injured.
All right, he's talking about Hunter Biden. He has had some challenges in his life. His brother, of course, died with a brain tumor. He and his brother, Beau, survived a car wreck that did kill the mom and their baby sister. So
he was in the car. They were in the car, too.
I think they were in the car, yes. Yeah.
I don't think I knew that. Yeah. You know, the prisons are filled with stories like this. And, you know, it depends on what you do.
Okay, we do have to take a break, but we'll be back with Dan after this. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana. We're pleased to have you aboard. And if you'd like to get in our final half hour, Dan Moldeo will be with us for most of that time. And his number and your number is 877-217-5757. In addition to being what some might view, would regard as the foremost investigative reporter of his generation, for the last 25 years, Dan has been a registered private investigator. And I would suspect in your endeavor, Dan, that helps the cause.
I do this because as a registered private investigator, not a licensed private investigator, but a registered private investigator, there are differences. It allows me to have access to databases that private investigators have access to. And I use that in my day-to-day reporting, those databases.
All right. Well, as we know, the abortion issue is now one of the top two or three, or some might say the top issue in America. It helped Donald Trump get elected, and in the past week, he's dodged questions about national restrictions, blaming the anti-abortion movement for the GOP losses in midterm elections. He's criticizing Florida and Georgia for their six-week bans. In a Meet the Press interview, Trump called Florida's ban on abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy a terrible thing. Now, for those who love Trump because he nominated three pro-life justices who were appointed in Amy Coney Barrett and Brett Kavanaugh and Neil Gorsuch, Trump is all over the lot on abortion, and he has not answered the question as to whether he was responsible for any abortions in his time as a man about town in Manhattan. But here's Robin Dow pulling up a sampling of Trump's evolving positions through the years on abortion, in which he went from pro-choice to pro-life and now appears to be going back into the pro-choice camp.
I'm very pro-choice. I hate the concept of abortion. I hate it. I hate everything it stands for. I cringe when I listen to people debating the subject. But you still, I just believe in choice.
But I'm pro-life.
You're pro-life, but you do think that there should be exceptions for rape and incest.
Yes, and life, you know, the health of the mother, the death.
Do you believe in punishment for abortion, yes or no, as a principle?
The answer is that there has to be some form of punishment.
For the woman?
Yeah, there has to be some form.
Since we got it back to the states, we did the Roe v. Wade thing, which they've been trying to get it done for 50 years. I got it done.
I believe in the three exceptions for rape, incest, and the life of the mother. I believe in that.
All right, there is Donald Trump all over the lot on abortion. And it's hard to believe that he remains the darling of the evangelicals, some of whom email me on a regular basis and talk about Joe Biden going to hell, and those words are actually used because he is a pro-choice Roman Catholic. Your thoughts, Dan Moldea?
I agree with you that it's the biggest issue in the country right now. The irony is that the Republican Party used to be, hey, federal government, get off my back, stay out of my life, and here they are trying to tell women how they should about their health care and how they must behave and being punished for doing something which could save their lives. I think I read something about a child, you know, somebody 10, 11 years old who got impregnated by, I think, her stepfather or something like that, and the Republicans were saying she has to have the baby. You know what? Again, we're beyond the looking glass on all of this stuff. And if I were a woman right now, I would demand the right to, you know, I would demand the right to choice. And that's to me the fairest thing. The whole thing is about choice. But Donald Trump said he was going to appoint Supreme Court justices who were going to ban abortion, and he appointed three of them who did, and who voted for the overturning of the law with regard to abortion.
That he did. I can recall in 1990 when Woody Jenkins was pushing anti-abortion legislation at the state capitol, Carl Gunter, the state house member from Pineville, took the floor. Gunter, by the way, was a Democrat. But he said that incest is the way you get, as he quote, champion racehorses. And in his words, incest might result in, quote, a super smart kid. So that shows you how people can be asses on this issue.
Yep.
Trish in Grand Coteau. Trish, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. I have a conundrum. If Donald Trump thinks he is still president, he can't run again.
Well said.
He's admitting he's not president.
He recently he has done that, by the way, and he, I think, has even referred to Joe Biden as President Biden. But obviously, you make a point that if he's still president, he's finishing his second term. But why not beat him fair and square rather than using a technicality to get him off the ballot?
Totally agree.
Okay,
great. I mean, let him stand for the vote. He's going to get his ass kicked. He's going to have a lot of very strong supporters, no doubt about it. People who are probably willing to kill and die for him, but he's going to get his ass kicked by the independents. And he's not fit for the job. Let's face it; he's just not fit for the job. So let him run, and let's beat him. I mean, he lost the electoral vote by the same number that he defeated Hillary Clinton, which he called a landslide victory. Joe Biden beat him in a landslide victory, according to Donald Trump's own definition of what a landslide is, and plus he beat him in the popular vote, as Hillary Clinton did in 2016.
There are only two U.S. presidents, people who actually were elected, who lost the overall vote twice, and they are Donald Trump and John Quincy Adams. But Trump is yet to acknowledge that Hillary Clinton got more votes than he did. If you remember, he was making the same case about voter fraud. If you look at the New York Times on Election Day of 2016, when Trump thought he would lose, and as did I, but he didn't, he won. He was setting the stage then for the same kind of shenanigans that happened in 2020.
I'm sure this is part of his whole business thing and everything else. Where, if you win, everything is fair and square and hunky dory. If you lose, it's fixed. It's rigged. You were defeated by evil forces, and that's his whole thing. I was just watching this old documentary about Roy Cohn, and the lessons I'm sure that Donald Trump received from this creep, Roy Cohn. You know, Joe McCarthy's chief counsel during the Army McCarthy here.
I know.
It's spectacular. It is really moving how this guy mentored Donald Trump into becoming the subhuman that Roy Cohn was.
Gretchen in St. Francisville. Gretchen, you're on the air with Dan Muldea.
Thank you. I'm calling to express how grateful I am that Biden is president. And I do think, and here this is, I'm an old lady speaking, almost 84, and I will tell you, I'm not worried at all about the age quotient, other than the exhaustion, physical exhaustion, but he's a scrapper, and I just have to speak with gratitude for the man. Thank you.
All right.
I think he's done a remarkable job, and his one term as president. He's you know, the infrastructure thing, people are going to be grateful for that forever. The Democrats just haven't trumpeted all the wonderful things that Biden has done in his term, but I'm afraid that this is going to have to be limited to one term, because I just don't think he's up to the job for what's about to come. I mean, you have the North Korean dictator and the Russian dictator and the Chinese dictator, not to mention, you know, what's going on in the Middle East. You know, this is a very dangerous situation that's brewing together. You have Donald Trump's right-hand man, his political guru, you know, Steve Bannon, who has been inciting these right-wing authoritarian governments all over the world. You have Hungary, which the president of Hungary has just shut down all First Amendment rights and newspapers and the free press, as far as it existed in his country. I mean, we're in a real battle for democracy here, and I'm saying, you know, it's all hands on deck right now. I just created a Substack called Mobology, where I'm creating the 2024 project, where this is going to be my contribution to all hands on deck. And I think it's something we all have to think about. It's, what kind of an America do we want? And I'm sure there's something that clearly Jim thinks about every day, because he has all these guests on who talk about it. And Jim's always got his head on straight about these things. And all the people who are calling, whether we agree with them or not, you know, everyone is thinking about this, and we have to make sure that we have the America we want when this is all over.
I saw that Cassidy Hutchinson, she was interviewed last night by Rachel Maddow. She said Trump's goal is to get a reaction, and he could care less whether it's positive or negative. He just wants to get into people's heads, and that he has done.
That's right. That was Roy Cohn's philosophy. They were saying how much he enjoyed being indicted, because it gave him the ability to claim that he had been victimized, and it's right out of the Roy Cohn playbook that Donald Trump is playing.
All right, we do have a number of people on holding, but let's get one in before the break. Ellen in Sherwood. Ellen, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. I agree with Dan Mulday at 99%. I just would say I don't agree that Kamala Harris would be a good president.
I hear you.
Well,
I remember her during the – I was very disappointed in her performance during the confirmation hearings for Brett Kavanaugh. I was very disappointed by her questioning, by her sarcasm and everything. I thought she was very unprofessional during that. And I played a minor role in that, because I knew Brett Kavanaugh. And when I had done my book on Vince Foster's suicide, I had been getting information from the Ken Starr's.
All right. Hold that thought, Dan. We will pick it up. Dan and Brett Kavanaugh and more after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Dan Mulday has been kind enough to spend much of the hour with us. We have a few more minutes with him, the great reporter in the Beltway, and please be concise. We're going to get to as many as we can. Chris in Opelousas. Chris, you're on. Good morning, sir.
Jim and Dan, hey, I figured that you two were up there standing and applauding with Canada's parliament for that Nazi that was up there with Zelensky the other day, right?
All right. He was talking about the Nazi who was unfortunately saluted in Canada by the leader of that great country. But Chris obviously is he's getting his pound of flesh. He says you and I would have been cheering, Dan.
Cheering what?
I guess cheering a Nazi. My father risked his life to fight the Nazis. I don't think so. But good try.
Our fathers were Antifas, anti-fascists. They were Antifas. They were fighting against fascism.
But Chris is probably offended because we've said some things about the former president that he doesn't like, and I have said it over and over that even though I think it's apparent that I take exception with many things the former president did and continues to do, He is highly popular in Louisiana, highly popular, as he is across the Southeastern Conference. He is a threat to win the election next year, and I think the support from former President Trump of Jeff Landry for governor has helped the attorney general, and that's why one of the reasons why he's ahead of the pack. So there we go. James in Metairie. James, you're on. Good morning, sir.
Well, good morning, Jim. Good morning, Dan. Dan's right. All hands on deck. DEFCON 1. Right. This right. country has become so numb to the radical, reckless statements of Trump. When a president says that a top military leader should be executed for treason, right. and there's also right. a Representative Paul Gosar, and then Trump constantly calling the lamestream media the enemy of the people.
All right. We did discuss that. Dan,
well said. Well said.
Yeah, James. Well said. James is an articulate guy, and I know James a little bit. I know he served our country in Vietnam. We thank you for your service. And James, for those who have heard him through the years, probably don't know it, but he's a Republican. Dan, what about you and Kavanaugh? You and young Brett Kavanaugh were buddies, shall we say?
We weren't buddies. We had lunch. What had happened was. I was offered a contract to do a book about Vince Foster's death. Vince Foster being the deputy White House counsel who went to Fort Marcy Park on July 20th, 1993, 6 months to the day after Bill Clinton took office, put a gun in his 38 in his mouth and blew his brains out. And the right wingers tried to make this look like that it was a Clinton-inspired murder, and you know you can imagine what it was. We all lived through this. And what I found was that it was a right wing attempt to make it look that way, and they were fabricating evidence and everything else. It was wild and crazy. Anyway, I had done this book, and I had a very conservative publisher, Regnery, which is very, very conservative, and you know they gave me the biggest advance they ever gave to an author, $100,000 to do this book, but I only had about 6 months to do it. But I interviewed everybody. I interviewed every cop at the scene, every rescue worker, everybody was part of the investigation. And I came to the conclusion that it's a no-brainer. The guy committed suicide. No ands, ifs, or buts about it. I also had to work with Ken Starr's office and his prosecutorial goon squad. And I was talking to his two top lieutenants, and they both directed me to this young prosecutor on their team named Brett Kavanaugh, that he was the guy who was providing non-public information on an off-the-record basis to people who were – to reporters where if they knew where they were coming from, they would do that. So I said yes. And because I was with Regnery, this right-wing publisher, they figured – they said, who's your publisher? I said, Regnery. They figured I was one of the guys in the club, not knowing that I had voted for Bill Clinton twice, and I love Bill Clinton. I love Hillary Clinton. They didn't ask me those questions. All they said was, who is your publisher? I said, Regnery. So they introduced me to Kavanaugh. And so and Kavanaugh told me something that many have felt that was a violation of grand jury secrecy, something that he was alleged to have done for a lot of reporters in this town. There were a lot of reporters in this town who were trying to get Bill Clinton's head on a stick, and they were serving as confidential informants for Ken Starr's office. And Starr's office, during an independent investigation by the federal judge, Norma Holloway Johnson, with a special master, they were identifying reporters as confidential informants. And so I filed an affidavit with the court, with Judge Johnson's court, and I said that here's what was going on, that these guys were intentionally leaking grand jury information to damage the president. And I identified OIC number 2, and no one ever put anything together. But then later on, when Kavanaugh went up for the Supreme Court, I received a judge for Kamala Harris's Senate office. And they said, is by some chance, we just dug this up, is OIC number 2 Brett Kavanaugh? And I said, it is. And I would only, what he told me was off the record. But what I have admitted to was that it was him who I met with, that he was OIC number 2. And number 2, that he did give me information that was, garnered from grand jury secret information. I was horrified and upset when here we had this guy on the potential of illegal leaks, and then they moved the ball from leaks to sex. And I just thought it was a horrifying thing. And again, I thought Kamala Harris, you know, contributed to a lot of that. And but the bottom line was that Kavanaugh was a guy who was known as the leaker from the OIC office. He was notorious for it. Everybody in town, every reporter in town knew that was going on.
David in Atlanta, please be brief. Hi, David.
Jim, thank you for having my favorite guest on. Mr. Maldea.
My favorite caller. How are you?
Thank you. I'm well, sir. Good to hear your voice, as always. Trump was campaigning in South Carolina yesterday. He referred to one of his primary opponents in the Republican primary in 2016, Jeb Bush, for being responsible for the war in Iraq. Now, is Trump just an outright liar, or is he that stupid, or both?
Jeb Bush, I think it was Jeb's brother who was president. But
no, that was the mistake that he made. He accused Jeb Bush of starting the Iraq War. That was the mistake that he made. That was his gaffe for yesterday. Along with that, that Biden was bringing us into World War II.
World War II.
As opposed to World War III. Yeah.
Okay.
That was not a red letter day for Trump yesterday. But
Biden's had a few. He's had a few
Atlanta,
senior moments too.
Yeah, everybody has them. I know. God, I'm having them.
Yeah,
you're a young man.
I'm with you.
You're a young man, Jim. I know you don't have them.
I wish that were the case. Patricia in Magnolia Woods, you'll be our final caller, unfortunately. And for those of you who are waiting, we'll have Dan back soon. Please be brief. You're on, Patricia.
Okay. First of all, I hate it that the news media makes a big froth about whenever the former president says outrageous things, because that's not news. He always does that. And then if you look at Biden's record, if you were his employer and were deciding whether to fire him or not, he's low unemployment. He got us through a pandemic without recession.
All right. And Dan, the Democrats don't have a great bench. If it's not Biden, who is it?
I think they do. I think they've got a terrific bench. I think Gavin Newsom, I think, is terrific. I think the governor of Michigan is terrific.
Pennsylvania, they've got good people, but it's
Shapiro
getting...
Shapiro in Pennsylvania.
It's getting close.
The governor of New Jersey. I think they have a hell of a
okay,
bench.
Okay.
It's just we're not going to get to know these people in
that's
the next 14
the problem.
Months.
That's the problem. And, of course, the Republicans would say the same thing about Trump, and he has suffocated... The air
but
of,
I agree with what that woman just said. I agree with her.
Yeah, Biden's based on what has happened in inheriting a country in the middle of a pandemic with a declining economy. I think you could make a case that he's done a credible job.
Heck of a team together, and they've done a great job. And, you know, God bless him for that. Again, I think he should take a bow. He was probably the greatest one-term president of all time. He should take a bow and get out so that we could get somebody else in there who can win.
But I don't think it's going to happen. But Dan, you're a believer, have been from the start, that we will have two new faces. But we are now just about 13 months away from the election.
And
so
it's going to be the same two guys, yeah.
Well, thank you, my friend. Always a pleasure. And
thank you, Jim.
Great to get
always
your insight.
A pleasure.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Keep going. You inspire me. And today, by the way, is the anniversary of the birth of a great American, one of my heroes, a guy I interviewed many times. He was always gracious. Usually we talked on his birthday, September 26th. 1914, San Francisco brought us François-Henri Lalanne, the great fitness guru who was the first fitness person to use television. And he, as stated, was with us many times. Here he was, Robbins pulled it up, 1999. So 24 years ago on his birthday, here was Jack Lalanne.
How can you be connected with the human body like I have for all these years and not realize there's a supreme being, there's an omnipotent power that put us together? After all, do you think man could ever make a calculator like your brain? Do you think that man could ever make a pumping system like your heart? Do you think that man could ever make a machine that the only way you hurt it, don't use it? Like I just bought a new Corvette car. The more I drive that car, the quicker it wears out, right? And this human body, the only way you hurt it is don't use it. So I want you all to remember, anything in life is possible, and God helps them that help themselves. I hope each and every one of you that are listening to us will help the most important person in the world, you.
Jack Lalanne at 85 in 1999. In 1979, at 65, he towed 65 boats near Tokyo. Handcuffed and shackled, the boats were filled with 6,500 pounds of Louisiana Pacific wood pulp. So he was a guy who was one for the ages. We'll never have another quite like him, Jack LaLanne. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned.